You're a SaaS founder. You've built something solid, but growth still feels harder than it should. Most SaaS companies don't fail because of bad tech. They fail because they've never become a must-have to the right customer. This podcast is here to change that. I'm Ton Dobbe, and this is the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. Every week, I talk to founders in the trenches, facing friction, making bold moves, and building companies that last. We dig into real choices around focus, positioning, customer pool, team alignment, the things that separate forgettable software from the ones that people can't live without. No hype, no hacks, just honest conversations to help you build something that people would miss if it was gone. If your SaaS should be indispensable but isn't yet, this is your podcast. Let's get into it. The guest on the podcast this week is Dinakara Nagala, CEO and founder of EmpowerMX.
Being remarkable shouldn't just be a slogan. You should make it as a responsibility. It's what you do when no one is watching. It's a system you build after the pitch is done, and the system should be built with the highest amount of accountability, with the most trust you can possibly put in. To me, the most remarkable companies, they don't scale high, they scale trust.
This is Dinakara. We dig into how he ignored the C-suite to build for mechanics on the hangar floor and created a successful exit to IFS. You'll hear how guaranteeing 10% productivity gains shrunk sales cycles from 18 to 6 months, and why 80% of his team came from aviation. Lastly, we explore why he opted to solve expensive problems instead of impressive ones, and what happens when you make unglamorous work profitable. Well, hi, Dinakara. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on my podcast.
Hey, Ton, I'm very excited to be on this. And I also looked at your book. It's fascinating. It's going to be on my list to read over the weekend in Kindle.
Good. Well, I mean, what a way to open it. And it's, I feel honored. Well, thank you.
It seems pretty cool. It seems pretty cool book. So I got
to
be.
It is, you know, and I wrote it with a purpose, and I'm eager to hear your perspective on that. But let's put that later. Yeah. We're going to definitely talk about a couple of concepts from the book, one or two of the 10 traits. Before we start talking about your entrepreneurial career, the company that you founded, that you sold, and what you're up to right now. So many things I want to tap into. But what drives you? What is your, where do you get energy from as an entrepreneur?
Creativity, creating solutions. The stuff that actually solves the problems is my energy, right? When I see something, I kind of envision if there is a solution around it, how various people can benefit out of it. That's what drives my energy.
Yeah, that's the true entrepreneurial spirit, right? And then do it and make it come alive. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, good bridge. I mean, you have a decade-long history in quite impressive technology spaces, particularly aviation, as I've seen.
Yes.
Starting then your company, FieldMX, which I refer to right now as EmpowerMX, in 2011, I saw. So that's been 14 years until you sold it to IFS recently. But yeah, I want to tap into that. Talking about making your drive come alive, creativity, solving problems. What was the big problem that you saw back then that was screaming for a solution that wasn't on the market and you decided, I'm going to build it?
Yes, that's a great way to start this. So I walked into Dallas in 1997 as an undergraduate from IIT Bombay in India. And my first job is in aviation. And I was fascinated by the whole technology that drives, that propels an aircraft, right? So when I walked into the area of maintenance, where the aircraft maintenance happened, again, it fascinated me that the number of people get on the plane, they do the work, and then they actually put the aircraft back into service. But what I saw is there is no software that helps them do their job effectively. A technician's job is to turn the wrench and get us out safely. Instead, they're spending a lot of time chasing paper, researching, figuring things out, running to grab material and stuff like that. So I didn't create a solution then, but fast forward a decade or so, it gave me a purpose that is that I've grown to like aviation. It gave me a purpose to solve that problem because maintenance is always looked at as a cost center, not a revenue generator. So we want to put a product in that actually saves money, makes the job of a technician very effective and simple, and he can actually perform his job versus worrying about everything else that happens around him.
Very well. I like that. Yeah, you're completely right. It's very often seen as a cost center. And what opportunities open up as you start looking at it from a different perspective, looking at the upside.
Right.
Yeah,
Right.
exactly. So, yeah, back in 2011, social was getting popular then. Mobile was getting popular then. AI was, yes, getting around the corner with, like, in a very immature way. So what was the first thing you did back then that has appeared to be, yeah, instrumental for the success that the company became?
So if you remember back in 2011, what's becoming popular is cloud. Amazon Cloud was taking off like crazy. What used to be data centers are slowly becoming part of the Amazon's network or disappearing, right? So I took that opportunity and we built a product from ground up to be a cloud-based product. So I'm very proud to say I'm the first person that really brought cloud into aircraft maintenance. None of my competition, no one else I know of, were in cloud. They're all installing software. So and then we kind of built with two different goals. One is cloud first and mobile first. So those two are the foundational principles for the product.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that? What were those principles adding that made it different?
The difference it made for me is I was able to go to Delta Airlines or Embraer and basically say, I can get you the productivity you want in less than 60 days because you don't have to worry about installing the software. You don't have to worry about making it compatible on the mobile devices because I can run anywhere, desktop, iPhone, iPad, Android devices. And then, oh, by the way, you don't have to worry about keeping the system running because I'm going to run in the cloud. So what worked for me is, one of your principles is don't sell the product, sell the idea. So when I went with that principle to the customers that are going to use the product, back at Delta, they immediately embraced it. And this is what we want. We want to change this. And and I'm going to support you if you can help me change the process on the floor. So Greg Emerson, who was the individual that we were working with at Delta, he really took that on and made it happen. And I'm so proud that Delta adopted my cloud platform. And we are the kind of first cloud platform Delta was implementing, outside all the ticketing and stuff, right? This is in maintenance.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
and they were able to deploy mobile devices and stuff, and they were able to give it to mechanic to do his job.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, you touched upon one of the chapters in my book, chapter number 9, sell the idea, not the product. So many
Yeah.
companies make that mistake, and if they don't, you already can explain what happens. Customers just jump
Right.
on it and because they haven't got a clue what the product is about, but they understand what the transformation is, and then you can make it come alive. So really good
Right.
point. Impressive names, for startups to really from the beginning be working with those type of household names in the aviation industry, an industry on the other end also that is heavily regulated, have all kind of constraints to deal with. So that's
Right.
kudos.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. So that was early days. Then you started growing. You already mentioned that. I mean, the maintenance space in itself wasn't new. I mean, there were companies out there, and I know a couple of them.
Right.
Funny enough, Unit 4, the company I used to work for, we had a field service module, which wasn't coming near to anywhere near to aviation and the specifics there, but particularly for maintenance of assets of, for example, universities and local authorities and so on.
Right.
It's a space in itself, and it has been evolving and. I wouldn't say innovating, but evolving in how they solve problems over decades. What advantage did you have back then? Well, possibly cloud is one of them, redefine the rules almost. Like, how did you make something that created instant differentiation? Or was that cloud?
So, no, see, technology is mechanism to delivery. It's not going to solve the problem for the technician. So what the differentiator for us is digitization. When you think of an 8-hour workday, and the amount of time a technician has to spend researching stuff is just enormous. When you look at 50%, 30%, 40% productivity rates, you're losing time on the aircraft. That's the most valuable asset that is sitting on the ground because you couldn't get your stuff done fast enough. So that's what we did. We digitized in such a way that mechanic doesn't have to leave the aircraft unless he has to kind of do his bio, food, or a break, which is so different from every t he comes into his operation, takes a piece of paper, walks to the aircraft. Oh, I need to go do this research in the maintenance manual. He walks back to a terminal, looks at the stuff, comes back to the aircraft, gets on it, and start working on it. So we just remove that entire process and be able to do that right on the mobile with the click of a button. And that changed the game for us.
Well, that changed the game for them.
Yeah, it changed the game. You're absolutely right. So we became a tool in his toolbox, which is how we want the mechanics to see. None of the mechanics looked at our software as a software. They looked at it as another tool they need to perform their job most efficiently and effectively, if that makes
Exactly.
sense.
Yeah, of course. So how did you come about kind of choosing this direction? I mean, is that, for example, because you started from the like what is the outcome that they desire? What is the end goal and then re-engineer back? Because I mean, the reason why all these processes are still sort of the paper-based process, but then in a more clunky way online, is because people follow
Yeah.
literally what people are doing. And you said, okay, let's change the game here.
Yeah, exactly. I was associated with another company prior to that, who's kind of doing something similar in the space, but doing it differently. So when I had this opportunity and partnered with one of the investors, White Cliff Capital Partners, his name is Bill Brown. His support did really help to develop the software in the way I wanted and deliver it to the technicians in the way I wanted. So it primarily to change the life of a technician from being spent his life on paper to actually do the work on the aircraft and get it out as fast as it possibly can. We brought about 15% in productivity. That translates to hundreds of thousands of dollars on a single maintenance event and millions of dollars for a facility.
Exactly. Well, what I see, for example, on the website, that's also something that I don't see a lot of companies do. You give a guarantee of
Right.
10% efficiency, and you already
Yes,
mentioned
we do.
like you do a couple of things in 60 days. How has that guarantee that you're giving, how has it changed the way the company behaves? Because what I've seen it a couple of times now, and it typically works two ways. It really helps on the confidence and the trust side of the customer, but it also changes a couple of really good things inside the company. How have you experienced that?
So since ours is a productivity software, we are not a regulatory must. So we give back money, we give back time, we improve the efficiency, right? So the industry itself is 20 years behind on the technology curve when it comes to maintenance. Aviation is very advanced, But when it comes to maintenance, it's so far behind. It was a challenge for us to sell the concept into this regulatory safety-driven industry, right? And so by doing what we did, when we start showing the proven numbers, the customer that wants to possibly buy the software, if it takes 18 months to make the decision, I know it kind of seems a very long time, we're able to shrink that to 6 months. So that helped. Now it made us responsible because what we promised to customer is guaranteed 10%, but we know we could save up to 20%. In some cases, we saved up to 30%. It's quite phenomenal because there's so much low-hanging fruit in there, right? So the behavior is it made us responsible. I gave trust to the customer that wants to acquire the software. So all of this combined, the sales process shrunk.
And I think that is only one of the people that one of the benefits that you see on the outside, that it shrinks that sales cycle. Because it becomes almost a no-brainer for the customer. And a lot of the times in enterprise software, it's not that they don't see why the data should move, but that really what came out with the book, The Jolt Effect, is that it's not the fear of missing out, it's the fear of messing up. And this is what it really addresses.
No, you're absolutely right.
So I mean, it makes you also it makes you responsible inside. So I think is it how does that responsibility then come alive in the company? I mean, is it that people start to keep each other between departments more honest? Is it that in R&D, for example, you look at everything you build with that extra lens of actually, yeah, okay, does it help br make or break the guarantee?
Great point. So EmpowerMX itself is built by the people that has background in aviation maintenance. That's one of the largest differentiators between EmpowerMX and my competition out there. I made it a point to hire people right from the industry because they know the pain. They understand the pain. They can speak the language, right? So just because of that, the desire to do right thing is built into our DNA. Even my technology team has quite a bit of background from aviation, and they either work in aviation IT, either as a consultant or as an employees. So when you look at 80% of the company coming with aviation background, the responsibility we felt we had to our customer is significantly more than you otherwise think will be there with in similar type of companies. So, which is why the word fans is a big, big thing for me, right? My customers always supported the company. They are the best salespeople that I ever had because they come to shows, talk passionately about the product, and they never hesitated to give feedback to other potential customers that you want to bring on board.
Let me make a small interruption here. Dinakar just made a critical remark about something that sets remarkable software companies apart from the rest. When customers show up at your trade show to evangelize your product without being asked or paid. This is not about having a good product. It's about creating something so valuable that your customers feel compelled to spread the word. It's a trait remarkable software companies master. First, they acknowledge that they cannot please everyone. Second, they sell the idea, not the product. And lastly, they create fans, not customers. Want to master these traits as well? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
Your question of how we improved or increased our accountability, it's kind of built into our DNA, the loyalty towards towards our customer base, and then the return we are getting, not just through the product, but my customers embracing us, all of that made us continue. It became a continuous loop of delivery, accountability, delivery, accountability, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. And it's something that a lot of companies can learn so much from. Because
Right.
a lot of companies, they have a product. Product is thrown over the fence. Marketing does something with it, get some leads, sales sell something. Couldn't care less whether they're overselling, yes or no. And then implementation has to deal with that. And at the end, the customer
Right.
is the one that is coming out
That's
the weakest. And what you're saying
yes.
here is you're looking at every customer as one that is going to be your biggest fan over time, because that is creating the flywheel. That is creating the fastest implementations, the highest margins,
Right.
the most word of mouth. And I mean, talking about, I know a couple of companies in the space of maintenance, asset management, and so on. It's not a group that is really outspoken and so on. So getting these people to do word of mouth to peers is a kind of a thing in itself.
Right,
So
right.
the moment you achieve that, I mean, talking about chapter number six in my book, remarkable software companies create fans, not customers. You call it culture,
Yes.
right?
Yes. I can. Yes. We create a cult around the software. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, people expect you create cult around software that's really cool and it's almost consumer grade. This is
Right.
asset management for aviation companies.
Right.
And it works, because at the end, we're all
It
human and
does.
we all want something that we are glad to use because it makes our life better. And I think it's a fantastic example of that. So, long story short, I mean, the product gets out, first customers, first fans being created, cult being created. What have you learned along the way when it comes to creating predictability in the business?
Predictability is a living legend, man. What you think is going to happen this year will just not happen. Something else will blow your mind. Some other event will blow your mind, right? Aviation is affected by a lot of things. It follows a cycle. To me, what I have seen is a 4-year cycle. Either economy hits it or some events hit it. Then by the time they recover, it's again a longer cycle. So what I learned is anything you plan, if you need to put about a 50% probability on it, you shouldn't plan for 100%. It's not going to work. So it took me years to figure that out, and finally I was able to get to a point that I was able to consistently tell what exactly is going to happen in a given year. But still, I'm living and learning. Last year we did phenomenal business, just phenomenal business, in the prior year too. Then this year everyone sighed and said, you're going to do great. And at the beginning of the year, I was told, nope, you need to temper it down. We got two great years. That means a down year is coming. So this happened to be a little bit of a down year for us. Not big down, a little bit of a down year. But that's what I'm saying. It's just that there are so many things that play into it, and you have to be cognizant of it when you are doing a forward analysis on forecasting and everything.
Forecast pipeline, forecast of hope. I mean, I remember all the
Yes.
conversations we had that were. Management of the company was handing in their estimate three in August, and then in September we had our country managers meeting, and then everything was sort of off the table because it wasn't right anymore. But of course there are things, if you do them well, the predictability increases, and I wouldn't say like with laser sharp predictability. But one of the things possibly that you've seen as well is the moment you niche down and you focus and you've got your specialism, of course, in aviation. But it does help because you could also have said, okay, we have a maintenance platform, a field service maintenance platform, anyone can use it. But you decided, no, it's going to be aviation, right?
Right, exactly. Yes, yes.
And thus, that of course helps in a way. First of all, from a differentiation perspective, but they also, of course, they have to deal with the ups and downs of the industry. So it's.
Yes. When you're going through ups and downs in the industry, the first thing that people do is only focus on the regulation safety. Rest of the time, things kind of come behind in the queue. But Like I said, now we are enough matured in the space that they can see, you know what? The best answer for my downturn is Empower MX because they're going to give me money back. They're
Good point.
improving my efficiency, right?
Good point. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that wasn't the case initially.
Yeah. Well, of course, not what you want, but that, I mean, if it helps to keep the thing going, absolutely good. But I mean,
Right.
I applaud for
Yes.
those guarantees because they really work from a differentiation perspective. Talking about like looking in hindsight, you know, you've started the company in 2011, you sold the company to IFS as an exit last year, from what I've heard. If you would build a company like that from scratch again, what would you do differently? And maybe like one like let's pick out one particular thing. I mean, I'm a big
Right.
passionate about positioning, for example. What would you do different to position your company?
Position my company. That's a good point. I don't think positioning will change at all because we kind of positioned it right, basically telling it's going to give you time back that you can use effectively to perform your real job. Right. So I don't think that piece will ever change. However, what will change with the new company is the technology, underlying technology we are using, right? So the biggest thing I had in the previous product is it's still laborious, a lot of data entry and stuff like that. The first thing I would do is get rid of the entire data entry process, use a ton of AI to simplify the process. And limit even the minute amount of data entry that possibly can be there. If I completely redo it, that's the one thing. And second thing I want to redo is, and this is becoming a new mantra for me in my upcoming products is at any point, tell you exactly where your operation is. Not at the month end, not after the end of the week, not end of the day, but any point you go in, it'll tell you 5,000 hours saved, which is equal to $1 million and 50 customers happy, and your cost is this. Any point I can go in, I can see exactly where I stand. And we
Yeah.
didn't do those metrics very effectively. We kind of focused on the ops piece of it, so.
Yeah. Yeah, they make a couple of very good points. A lot of companies
Yeah.
when they are saying, okay, we're talking about building from scratch, you know, they typically follow the similar type of approach, but you challenge it and say, hey, knowing what we know right now, there's a couple of things we don't have any even have to do anymore. So because technology can take care of it. And what I also like about your point about knowing exactly where you stand on a day-to-day basis, but the example you gave is a different one, or at least it's like slightly different. It's not to see, okay, like what aircraft is in what part of the maintenance stage and how many people are actually working today and how many and so on. But you start to bring back like the insights on why did they like giving them a good feeling of why they bought the solution in the first place. This is how many savings we've made. This is how many how we are doing better
Right.
than last week. And the moment people keep seeing and you demonstrate that the technology that they're using is constantly helping them to do better, they'll never throw it out.
That's exactly right. And the first part you mentioned, that's one thing we did that is basically where we are exactly in the maintenance, but we never kind of converted that to dollars and cents.
Exactly, because that's what people want to know. Because otherwise, at the moment they don't see that and they just see a nice portal and a couple of screens, it's like, yeah, okay, we have to do some cost cutting this year. It's a pretty expensive
Right.
license. Take it out.
Yeah, take it off. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me see. We talked about positioning, we talked about predictability, scaling the company. At some point, you know, you sold your company for well over $1 billion, I understood. So it's, yeah, you've reached that critical size of a scaling company. What have you learned in that scaling process? When you move from like product market fit and product market fit, you get your first, kind of motions going. Suddenly things have become more, yeah, I wouldn't call it predictable, but you can start to replicate things in a different way. What have you then done to scale it in a way that it keeps your organization lean, but increases profit and revenue?
Yes, great question. Just a small correction there. The company was sold to AFS, who is well over $1 billion in revenue. I think 1.5 billion now, I believe. So what have we done to scale at Empower Max is, traditionally, as companies grow, they create more sales force, they create more divisions, they create this network of org structure that is pretty complicated, where accountability becomes a distant being, right? As organizations become deeper, it's really tough to manage the accountability, and that's one of the things I learned while being at a large company. And so we made a conscious effort to stay lean all the time. However, one of the things we did differently from majority of our competition is we participated in a lot of places where aviation, my potential customers kind of come in. So it gave me a way in a small amount of time to make a bigger impact. So you don't, we spend time and money on getting a prime spot at an event that showcases our product, that showcases what the company does, and we bring in our customers to actually co-present the success of the product. So that gave us the ability to deal with many customers, and that also gave us the ability to cut down our sales cycle, at which point we didn't have to employ too many people in the process, right? So we maintained that cost structure along the way as the company grew. Now we are into IFS, and IFS has a large sales structure across the globe. And now my team works with the sales, different country sales team, and we educate them about the software. So now they help cross-sell, and they bring us in to sell more of our modules and more of our product, to the customers in those regions, if that makes sense. But end of the day, EmpowerMX, from a cost structure point, we didn't have to dramatically increase our sales. We were able to sell more with less. That's been a good success for us.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like to focus on the right niche. Well, focusing on the customers that become fans, part of the cult. Yeah, that is at the end the formula for a lean organization, not only in sales but a marketing, in implementation teams, in R&D as well. It's a loop. And
That's exactly right.
did you measure, for example, ARR per employee as a measure?
It is a measure, but given now we are part of the public company,
Don't say anything about it.
No, it's a measure, and we are pretty profitable firm. It took a while for us to get there, but once we got there, we are doing pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a powerful metric to see if that number is going up across the board, because if it's around a certain number and it goes up, it tells a lot about the efficiencies you're creating.
Yes, we are about 78% from that standpoint. Our gross margins are pretty high for this kind of an industry. That's primarily we have a very lean cloud management. We automated wherever we possibly can. And when I'm at four customers or 25 customers, I have the same team of people that is managing my cloud because automation kind of took care of the process.
Smart decisions. Talking about, well, I mean, you started the company in 2011, and then of course you sold it in 2024 to IFS. How has your definition of success changed over time?
That's a great point. The definition of success for investors, it means something. For customers, it means something. For employees, it means something else, right? So the biggest thing that changed me is how do I adapt to different situations, correct? But one common metric is overall satisfaction and trust. Trust has been the biggest one that is redefining the way I'm producing the new software also. It's just the underlying thing. So when it comes to employees, one thing I learned and I firmly believe in, and my message to all the leaders out there is, if you can't reduce organizational stress, you are not a successful leader anymore. And from that, organizational stress is a very critical factor, particularly when you're working in a global team where you have people all over the US, then you have folks in offshore entities, then Europe, then whatever, right? So there is these time zones you're fighting. So often we overlook that component, particularly post-COVID. It became such a challenging thing to measure that. So that's to me is, are my investors happy with the progress I'm making? Are my employees happy with their lifestyle that the company work culture created? Because majority of time when you think about it, your wake time you're spending working. Are my customers happy with the product that they're working with? So, with EmpowerMX, I wouldn't say I'm successful on those factors, but that's the biggest thing I learned, and that changed my perspective on how I'm continuing with my new ventures going forward.
Yeah. I think you touched upon a very important topic that a lot of companies, a lot of leaders are forgetting in the heat of the day. Trust
Right, right.
being the driver for the momentum that your company is creating. You already
Right.
mentioned other ventures, and I've seen that you are now involved in a number, one of them being Authy Marketplace. The other one is Mantra. Now that you, of course, sold the company and your involvement likely is going to change over time with the previous business. What has that opened up for you as the next big thing that you're going to explore?
Thank you for asking that. I'm very excited about my upcoming ventures and my 2.0, what I fondly call as. See, AI is brought a dramatic shift in the way you think. I think the discussion of AI is still underwhelming. People are not really understanding the way it's going to change the way we transact business, we transact life. So in some of the new ventures I'm part of, a number of them, they all are no longer mobile first, cloud first. They are AI first. Only because if you link back to what I was saying before, I want to take away the monstrous task of data entry that's involved in today's applications. When you look at SAP, Salesforce, or any Oracle applications, or any, I mean, SaaS products for that matter, there's just so much data entry, right? So I think one of the biggest tools AI is going to bring in for me is enables human to do more dignified job instead of spending 60, 70% of their life doing data entry.
Yeah, true.
Their skill is just getting wasted because they have to spend a lot of time doing the process. So that's one thing that I'm so excited about. Second thing is the biggest issue with particularly I take my nonprofit application, SIAM. Where we have to deal with all the help requests come in and people, I want to give trust to people that they can invest into. The biggest thing we're dealing with is fraud. It's just inherently built into our society. I mean, you wake up every day, how many spam calls you have to deal with? Where there's money, there is 10 times the fraud, right? So, or maybe I mean, more times. So that's another thing I want to use AI to just take it out of my systems because all my systems are so dependent on trust, on giving the trust to people that they can do this job without getting affected. So that's what it's changing. So my RT, where it's bringing educators and learners together globally on a singular platform where, as a parent, I want to be able to go find someone that can help my kids learn music or learn math or get through SAT or something like that. But I want to take the job of finding a person that can help my kids or retool myself. So RTE is the Amazon of education. Anything you can teach remotely, you'll be able to learn and do that on the platform. That's number one. Number two, when you think of all the teachers that are employed in schools, the service they give to the society is so undervalued. So RTE is going to give them a way to provide even extensive service post their school day and actually better their lives. Create a new economy that wasn't possible for educators in the past. So that's what I want to do, just bring all of the educators and learners together on a singular platform, use AI to help them do their job better, create digital twins of educators so they can teach more, impart their knowledge. And for learners, the same AI can help give impartial feedback on where they can improve, what learning paths they need to adopt. It's all kind of built into it, built into
That's
the
fantastic.
process.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a whole new way of learning these days, and yeah, the power of AI is going to be a fundamental help there in the augmentation style rather than the automation style. Because I mean, you're coming actually from two sides: automation, first of all, on the maintenance side, and now on the augmentation side as well.
That's an astute observation upon you. It's not just automation, but augmentation. Thank you.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, one of the other things that you're involved in is called a platform called Mantra, right?
Yes.
Digital twins. Is it part of
Yes.
Authy, or is it separate journey?
It's a separate journey. I'm not going to go into how I got into it. There is a backstory behind that, which we just talked before this session began. So the idea here is, again, same thing. Take out these mundane jobs that people have to do that really lowers their effectivity during the day, and use AI to improve overall livelihood of people. So with Mantra, what I want to do is make therapy easily accessible in the most trusted way possible, using the mind of a therapist, not simply chatting, not simply texting, and not simply using some pre-coded stuff. It's a live platform. Any therapist can go create a digital twin of himself and impart his values into the twin. Now, suddenly, you can get therapy out to places where it is not possible. One of the things I was learning is that there is a huge set of people in many countries that requires mental health support, right? So this will kind of take care of that, because now I can scale from 1 to 1 million quite easily and effectively, and using the tested and tried methodologies, right? So there is a big push behind it, not just give mental health providers, therapists, a new way to create economy for them, but also get the help, because it's 1 in 5 people that today requires mental health. 1 in 5 people are getting it. The remaining four are not getting it because of the availability, because of financial reasons. So
Exactly.
Mantra is going to solve the problem, again, using AI.
Nice. Yeah, I think it's how this rounds back the whole story of solving, finding those complex, unglamorous challenges. And like that's what I found, and that also kind of resonated with me, because that's where innovation happens, right? Solving the same thing and making it a little better. We've seen that. But having an eye for what is still unsolved, what is underserved, what are the unglamorous things that people leave because there's other cool things to do, I think that is a way. That is a really, really good way to make the world a better place at the end. You've proven that with Empower MX, and now you're doing similar things here for the education space, but also for the health space. And what I've started to kind of note down during the conversation is that word trust is a big one in your in the journey. I like that.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So one last question. If you, from your entrepreneurial journey, have to give a do and a don't to, well, people that aspire a similar career, a similar impact that you're making, what would that advice be?
So, if there is one thing I would leave your listeners with, it's this, right? Being remarkable shouldn't just be a slogan. You should make it as a responsibility. It's what you do when no one is watching, being responsible, being accountable. It's a system you build after the pitch is done, and the system should be built with highest amount of accountability, with the most trust you can possibly put in. To me, the most remarkable companies, they don't scale high. They scale trust. That's what the message I want to leave with the listeners today.
Fantastic. I couldn't have said it better myself. I'm actually jealous about a couple of lines that you made here because they are so true. They're so true. Well, thank you very much, Dinakara, for sharing the wisdom, sharing your passion, going into depth in a couple of areas that you've solved and how you've made the company a success. I'll keep following you. And where can people go to find out more about the company and or to say hi to you?
It's ifs.com. That's where Emporamex is the home for now. And generally, if you want to know more about me, the best place is LinkedIn or dinakaranagala.com. That's my website. And I have a very open social life on Facebook and Instagram, where all the professional life and personal life blends there. So follow me at DL Nagala on my social platforms and on LinkedIn, Dinakara Nagala, and IFS is where I'm providing my services to. So, Tom, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to be on your podcast. It's an honor. And I also want to tell the users, if you haven't checked his book out, you should really read it from what I went through it at higher level. It's a ton of information that's very valuable for SaaS founders. And I do think everyone should check it out. Thank you so much.
And that wraps up my conversation with Dinakara Nagala, CEO and founder of EmpowerMX, now part of IFS. If you got value from this episode, please share it with other SaaS founders who need to hear this as well. And if you got 10 seconds, a quick rating or review on Apple Podcasts will help more people to find these conversations. Thank you for listening to the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. If you want more insights like this, subscribe to my daily email, Espresso with Ton. It's a 2-minute shot of clarity for SaaS founders who want to create pull, not push. You can sign up, along with getting my book, at valueinspiration.com. See you in the next episode.